So in listening to Dharma teachings, it can be useful to continue to keep a good proportion of one's attention in one's body, so that we're listening not just with our minds, but with our hearts and with our very selves, in fact. That so far as we're consciously inhabiting the fullness of our experience, then whatever aspects of our experience are resonating or being affected or not, we'll be more likely to be aware of them. And a lot of the learning and the understanding we do in Dharma practice is not through the door of the intellect, through the language and the words, although the words and the language are rather useful, or else you wouldn't know what I was talking about right now. Or maybe you would, but I wouldn't know that you did. So this teaching of the Buddhas, the first noble truth as he described it, or ennobling truth as some describe or interpret the understanding of it. This language of nobility is interesting. We associate it with sort of aristocracy and privilege in this day and age, I think, quite commonly. And yet it comes from an association of that which is uplifted, noble, not so much high-born, but leading to that which the heart seeks for, that is its greatest potential. And so this truth of suffering that the Buddha spoke about, and the truth that we need to understand this truth, to see it, to really look at. The Buddha spoke again and again about what that means. And the word he used was dukkha. I guess most of you know that word. And the translation most commonly used is probably suffering. The translation I like the most, myself, is that which is hard to bear. It's not a single word. But dukkha is that which is hard to bear, or the experience of having to bear that which is hard to bear. So it's not an objective thing, it's a subjective thing. And this is actually really important, that it's hard to bear because another grey, wet, cold, damp day here in England may indeed be hard to bear for us. That can be the reality of our experience, and not to judge that or deny it. But of course, clearly, a damp, wet, rainy day in another place might be cause for celebration and not hard to bear at all. So we see the subjectivity in that simple experience that's all around us, it seems, of what it means for something to be hard to bear. In that sense, at a simple level, our worldly experience as human beings is filled with elements of this. It's not filled only with elements of this. And it's important to understand the Buddha's teaching was not that this is all there is, you know, tough. But don't kid yourself that this is a significant element of what's here. Don't pretend otherwise. And the Buddha spoke about the conditions of our existence that give rise to this experience. He talked about this body, which is subject to birth, to aging, to sickness, and to death. And all bodies, my body, your body, all these bodies, having been born, will go through this process of growing, which isn't always easy. And then, having grown, starting to slowly, and at first somewhat imperceptibly, but over time more and more clearly, come apart, break down, stop functioning, no longer be able to do the things that they could do, no longer presenting an experience as comfortable or as flattering or as capable as it was. I was mentioning, just speaking with some of you just now, that you know, sometimes we need to check and see what's happening with our bodies, and sometimes we need to really respect that, oh yeah, we've injured something, or we're well, or maybe just through the process of age we're unfirm in some place. We need to respect it. and having injured my ankle walking a couple of weeks ago, I've got something propping it up so it's not under too much pressure while I'm sitting. But I know that when I first hurt my ankles in my teenage years, they healed pretty quickly. And now, some decades later, it's going to be a while before that thing's really happy again. Doesn't mean I have to be unhappy, but as far as the truth of my ankle goes, aging is playing a part. It's not just injury, but it's aging means it doesn't heal so quick. That's a small thing, really, compared to what some of us are called upon to deal with in terms of bodily health. And, of course, that's really all just a prelude, isn't it? To the fact that in the end, the whole thing stops completely and ceases to operate, which is also just a little bit scary and might indeed be a little bit uncomfortable. And that's their bodies. We also have these hearts. And these hearts can be touched by sublime, sweet and beautiful experiences of joy and love and connection and appreciation and kindness. Indeed, they can. But our hearts can also feel really difficult things that are hard to bear. And the Buddha spoke of sorrow, pain, grief, lamentation and despair. And it's like, doesn't sound like a great advertisement for meditation, does it? Come along and you too can experience sorrow, pain, grief, lamentation and despair. But the truth is, if we look at our lives, we see we don't have to come along here to experience it, because it's actually probably happened for us all in some way or form before now. I don't think anyone gets to be very old at all before they encounter some of that. But that doesn't mean that we're conscious about it or acknowledging its implications. And our culture actually works quite hard to suggest that if anything of that has ever happened to you, it's because something went wrong and it was probably your fault, and if you did it right, it wouldn't have happened that way. Anyone got that message from in any subtle or less subtle form in their life? That if you ever experience sorrow, pain, grief, lamentation or despair, it's because you did it wrong, and the ones who did it right, well, they're just happy all the time and they don't have to deal with that? The Buddha's teaching is saying, yeah, we experience this. Acknowledge the truth of this so that we don't add another layer of suffering to it, which I'll come to in a moment. But for me, and some of you have probably heard me articulate this particular way of understanding it quite a few times, but somehow I don't get tired of it, so I hope you don't. There is no way we can avoid this in life. In case so far you've got through thinking that you have avoided it or that maybe you could avoid it, it breaks down like this as I see it. If you love something, someone in this life, at some point you will be parted from that person or that thing or that situation. And you will feel sorrow or grief, perhaps even lamentation and despair. It will definitely be painful. When we are parted. Because we die, they die, or it just disintegrates. Things do, people do. And so there's going to be pain if we've loved anything or anyone in our life. It will happen. And you know, if you don't love anyone or anything in this life, that will hurt. That will hurt. And there will be sorrow, pain and grief, lamentation and despair if one hasn't loved anything in this life because of that fact itself. And I can't see a third option. And I've regularly asked large groups of people if they could find one for me. And no one's yet come and said, oh yeah, there's another way. It doesn't go this way or that. I'm not asking you to be clever here and figure it out, because maybe one could find a way to describe it that sounded like an escape from this. But I think the truth of it is there isn't. If we love, we will feel loss. If we don't love, we will feel the loss of that loving capacity. So this is part of what it means to be a human being, with this remarkable, sensitive, loving capacity of heart, this resonant sensitivity that appreciates and cares for some things, and of course other things doesn't quite so appreciate and care for. And the Buddha also spoke about the experience of what he called dukkha. He talked about birth, aging, sickness, death, sorrow, pain, lamentation, grief and despair. And he talked about being separated from what we like or love. Now, we don't like that. It's hard to be separated, even temporarily. from what we care for, what we like, what we love. And he talked about what it's like for us when we're sort of connected or associated with things we don't like. How annoying and unpleasant and painful and difficult that is. And this is kind of more for the mind. It's the psychological experience of being separated from what I want. It's hard. Being associated with what I don't like. It's hard. Whether people or places or things, it's hard. And the ultimate, not getting what I want. How many times do we get what we want? Exactly the way we want it, when we want it. If we're lucky, occasionally. But mostly, not so often at all. Not getting what I want is really hard for us. And yet, the interesting thing is, with 6 or 7 billion human beings, all of them having a different, particular, organized sort of bunch of wants, and that's leaving out the billions of other creatures, it seems like there's no way it can work that we get what we want. Has anyone else noticed this in their life? Because we can notice and think, it's because I'm not trying hard enough. It's because they're all doing it wrong. Because nobody else can see. It's obvious that this is how it should be. The way I want it is how it should be. Isn't it? But if we just see, oh, this is part of the condition of being human. To be separated from what we like. Sometimes. To be associated with what we don't like. Sometimes. And to not get where we want, probably much of the time. Or maybe, and I wish you good fortune in it being more than that. Sometimes it can be. And what's it like for you, if you just listen and hear this, and I'm sure many of you have heard this before, but what's it like if we really let ourselves hear what's being spoken to? That this is part of our life. All of us. Because what easily happens is we feel like it's somehow happening to me because I did it wrong or someone else did it wrong, and it feels very like constrictive and separating. We easily become defined by that which we've found hard to bear, that which we call suffering, that which we call our difficulty. We can easily become defined by that in a perception or a conceiving that suggests this is happening to me, but it's not what's happening for everyone else. Because it's not. It's not what we sit down and tell each other about every day. In fact, there's almost kind of sometimes a taboo on mentioning it. So we get angry with the weather instead. You know, the weather isn't miserable, terrible, or what was the other word? Horrible. Anyway, it's none of those things. It's not horrible, miserable, or terrible. But sometimes the feelings we have in our experience for us are of terror, of horror, of misery, of distress in different forms. And that's not to say that's the whole of it, as I said already. But just naming this and sitting underneath it, so to speak, to understand, to stand under, which is to say, oh, it's like this. It's like this. And just pause with it. Now, I know that. I've heard that. You know, me, I could say, I've said that. But we say it again. Oh, it's like this. That doesn't mean there isn't beauty and joy and sweetness and love and many good things in our lives. And I hope that there are for you. And in fact, I trust that there are for you, or you wouldn't have got here, to be honest. Having space for doing something like this is because there's actually enough togetherness and enough support and enough resources in our life that we're not out there battling to provide ourselves food and shelter in every single moment of our life. And many people and most creatures, that's how it is for them. That's how it is. So in that sense, for all that, there are no doubt difficult things in our lives. Certainly in mine. I imagine also in yours. But also there are that for which we could say we could be grateful that is of good fortune. So just contemplating, reflecting on this term, dukkha, that which is hard to bear. Unsatisfactory, stressful, that which is suffering, or that, these are all different ways teachers I know have used the language, or that which is, or brings anguish. There's a level in which we can understand these experiences as this is part of life. Now, the Buddha didn't say that we were stuck or defined by this. In fact, there's a kind of a wonderful phrase he's known for saying where he says, I teach one thing and one thing only, suffering and the end of suffering. And a friend of mine in America, he once observed, he thought, well, that's curious, because that doesn't sound like one thing, that sounds like two things. And he reflected somewhat, I would say, cheekily, but I don't think disrespectfully, he thought, well, maybe the Buddha started off just teaching one thing, suffering. But he found that if he just taught suffering, it wasn't quite so compelling or interesting for people. And so he thought teaching suffering and the end of suffering might be more useful. And of course, I think it's true for us. When we hear suffering, and it's not intentionally entitled, it's not just contemplating suffering, but suffering and freedom. But we quickly want to jump, don't we? To the second, let's get there, you know? And we will, at least in terms of the territory I want to cover. But what is it to just pause? What is it to pause at this point and just, there is that. And notice what arises for you. Like, does being asked to reflect or contemplate in this way bring you in contact with that, which is hard to bear in your life? Does it bring to mind that which may be hard to bear in the world or in the lives of others that you care for? What does it do for us? What happens if we let ourselves listen to our responses to this topic being named? Because listening is part of what's important here. Listening is the sense door that's understood to be most easily expressing or most closely paralleling the quality of compassion that can hear and receive suffering, that can make space for it and that can respond to it, which is part of its transformation. But first there has to be the listening. There can't be the getting into the fixing or the figuring out or the getting free from too quickly. So there's some words. I, this morning, making good use of our modern technology, Googled Roger's thesaurus and got some synonyms for suffering. And this is it, alphabetically. Adversity, anguish, difficulty, discomfort, hardship, misery, misfortune, ordeal, torment, torture, affliction, that's not alphabetical, distress, dolor, never heard that word before, martyrdom, passion. The law I looked up, it said sorrow and grief. So, pain, sorrow, grief, lamentation, despair. Covered, I think, probably. And the antonyms Roger offers is advantage, benefit, blessing, comfort, contentment, ease, favour, good luck, happiness, joy, pleasure, relief, health. Do you notice any difference between hearing those two lists and how you respond to that? Yeah? What do you notice is the response to the first list? Has anyone got a word or an observation they could share just concisely? Or to the second, but start with the first. Heaviness. Great. Anything else?
Aversion.
Yeah.
Dark.
Okay. Shrinking. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Notice all of that. It's like heavy, dark, and I think with dark, you know, the absence of light rather than in terms of a colour is a reasonable way to use that language. Shrinking, that sense of being weighed down, pressed down upon. And that's just hearing some language about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And what was your response to noticing the list of the antonyms, the things that weren't suffering, or the opposite? What was your sense of it?
Light.
Warmth. Yeah.
Warmth.
Sorry? Warmth that. Yeah, great. Anything else?
Open.
Relief.
Uplifting.
Open. Right. So, sorry?
Not that again.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah. So, what you're describing classically very easily mirrors what we do with the difficult and the hard to bear, which is we contract, we tighten, we shut down, and we feel oppressed by the fact of it. And that is actually the dukkha that we can free ourselves from quite directly. The fact that this body is born and will die, that's how it is. That is not actually the core of dukkha. The core of dukkha is and suffering is where we actually contract, shut down, feel burdened, weighed down, and crushed by this which is the nature of all of our lives. Huh? Going out in the rain in Davrick's poem, how many times? I've seen it, you've seen it, I'm sure. We kind of go like this in the rain. It doesn't keep us any drier or warmer. In fact, we'd be better off to wave our arms about if we want to stay warm and dry. Well, not dry, but warm, which is the key issue. And you might like to at lunchtime, which isn't too far away in case you're concerned. You might like to go outside and just spend a few minutes in the rain, jumping up and down, waving your arms, stamping your feet, letting your body not be contracted tight and made small by that experience. Because it's really interesting to see how direct and literal a metaphor it is for what we do in our lives. Because that layer, which the Buddha called the second arrow, the first arrow, we all have this. That's part of what it means to be a human being. But the layer we add to it, of this, it's being done to me, it's not okay, it's wrong, it's bad, it's horrible. That's not true. It's not being done to you, because it's being done to everybody. It's not because you got it wrong. Unless everybody got it wrong, which means that's what's normal. So at least we're normal. Which is a relief, if we thought we weren't. And the sense that somehow it makes me separate from everyone else. This is at the core of the dukkha, of the suffering, that gets layered onto the fact that it's hard at times for us. And I've sat here with a group of people, including perhaps some of you in the past, and invited people to talk about things that brought uplift and joy and happiness. Because that can also be a challenge for us sometimes. And what I'd like to just take a few minutes to do now is to ask and see, is there anyone who feels okay, and only if you feel completely okay, just to name something simply, without needing to explain how and why, but something that you find hard to bear. And you can just indicate with your hand and speak, or you can just speak if there's space.
Death.
Yeah. The thought of it, I guess. The thought of it, or the death of another?
I've always struggled with that issue with is it done to me or what part do I play? Mm. And I've noticed that there is that oh, it's my fault, going to guilt, blame. Yeah, just not helpful. But if there's something empowering about owning it, if it's possible to take any kind of responsibility,
that's another issue. So good to see the issue. Yeah. And I asked for more information, so it's really great. And what I'd like to invite, and just to name, and I just will try and clarify if I'm not sure what's being pointed to name. So make it more than just one word, maybe. Say how it relates to you when you name it, something that's difficult or hard to bear for you. It can be mind, heart, body, world. And just speak it.
Sense of loneliness, feeling this. Some people I would feel, want to be really close to, and I feel that's not possible.
Okay. Yeah, sense of loneliness. Yeah. Yeah, someone's saying here separation from.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Failure.
Failure, yeah. Yeah, not having managed to do it the way we thought or were told we should be able to.
Or fear of it.
Or fear of it, okay. Yeah.
Loneliness after a breakup.
So we listen as you're hearing to people. It takes some courage to speak these things. Thank you.
Heartbreak.
Heartbreak, yeah. Yeah. This is something we know. Human beings sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. Can people hear at the back? Heartbreak was what was spoken there.
Feeling outside.
Yeah. Yeah. So different, excluded. Yeah. Yeah.
Distress in somebody or something that I love.
Hmm. Right. So someone we care for, their distress is actually hard to bear. Yeah. Yeah.
Parental responsibility.
Yeah, parental responsibility. Hard work can be. Hard to bear. Yeah. Yeah, responsibility. Thank you, yeah.
Regret.
Not
something I
right.
didn't do.
Right, something one didn't do. Yeah, regret can be hard, huh?
And now it's too late to get it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So as you speak, be really gentle with yourself. If it's touching something for you to name something in this way. It's actually a simple but also a very powerful, not necessarily easy thing just to speak. But I'd just like to see if there's a few more people who might like to. You don't have to. This is just an open invitation.
Not being in control.
Not being in control.
Mm.
That's hard. Yeah.
Anxiety about bad things happening.
Anxiety about bad things happening. Yeah, it's hard.
The disappointment is in thwarted expectations of others or of my own
mm-hmm.
plans. Or,
mm-hmm. So disappointed, thwarted mm-hmm. expectations mm-hmm. in relation to others mm-hmm. and oneself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Health problems.
Yeah. Yeah. So notice as you're listening what it's like to speak, but also what it's like to listen and hear as people speak.
Disappointment with oneself but not having lived in a moral way.
So there can be a disappointment in how we have lived in a way that maybe wasn't what we might, from where we are now, have wished to have been able to live. Yeah, a moral life, or as moral a life as we might have wished, because I'm guessing it's not an either or here. Yeah, yeah.
The plants of refugees in Syria at the moment in South Sudan.
Yeah, so the reality of some people's lives that are so hard right now in Syria, South Sudan and other places in the world far afield and sometimes not so far afield. It's hard to really be open to and to feel the truth of how that is. Yeah. So having the wish to respond but not knowing how to or what will be useful or helpful. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Witnessing mental anguish in someone close.
Yeah.
And therapeutic attempt
to suicide. Right. So someone in real mental anguish that's close to you and seeing them actually trying to escape from it through something that would be quite extreme in that, taking one's life, yeah. It's very hard. Yeah. At the back there? Yeah. Yes?
Being misunderstood.
Mm. Being misunderstood, yeah. So now I'd like, if you have anything more that you want to name that hasn't had a chance yet, you're welcome to still name something of what's hard to be. But I want to actually just invite anyone who has a sense of what they're noticing as they're listening to people speaking or sharing in a simple but quite honest and to me, courageous way, some of their experience that we may or may not recognize in our own. But what's it like listening just now as we're sitting here and the speaking has been happening? So again, if anyone has any responses that you'd be comfortable to express, just concisely, yeah. So you feel the realness and the sharedness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And I notice a lot of nods and hmms. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Similar to that, sense of recognition.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. Recognition. Yes. Yeah. Good. Good. Yeah.
A sense of painful resonance.
Painful resonance. Yeah. It's like, oh, we feel our heart touched, impacted. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Buddha's word for that, anukampa, it's a close relationship to compassion. It's the quivering of the heart, which then leads to compassionate responses. If we can let ourselves be touched. Yeah. Yeah. Is there someone at the back? Did I see a hand? Yes.
I think you just touched what I said. I feel like it's interesting how the ability to hold that and be sympathetic.
Mm. Right. Right, so a sort of a holding of it and sympathy, empathy. Yeah.
Maybe even a bit stronger sense, like your heart goes out to people when
right.
I see.
Right.
Which is stronger than holding it.
Yeah. So for you, you can actually feel the movement, and that's an expression of an actual movement of response. And so the heart can respond. It's not just that we say words or do things, but the heart goes out. And we know that expression, don't we? And my heart goes out to you. It's like the heart. And if we think about what that language means, the heart that seems to be in here, yeah? It's where we think it is. Sometimes it's in here like this, going, yeah, it's raining. Sometimes it thinks, oh, wow. And it actually goes out. It actually expands. Yeah? We know this experience. It's true. And something happens when that happens. More than just the expansion. But the expansion is part of it. Thank you. Yeah. So, did I see a hand at the back? I think, yes. That's left, my left, your right first, and then the other back. Yes.
I have to read something.
Please.
Bearing the weight of the dysfunctional
family. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Bearing the weight of a dysfunctional family. Yes. And sometimes we actually, you know, stand in a place where we have to hold what couldn't be held before us in the previous generation, and we say, actually, I want to bear this rather than just pass it on. Yeah, thank you.
I feel more connected, and therefore less outside.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so more connection, less outside, yeah. So just taking a moment to check in with your body and breathe a moment or two. And I don't. If there was someone who was actually on the verge of coming forward with something they want to say, you're very welcome to. But just to really invite us to not have to withdraw into your body. Just, if I can make a distinction here, it doesn't mean you have to somehow, if your heart was going out, you have to somehow come back in some way. But more notice what it is to have your body as the central point of reference around which there can be a field as large or small as is true for you, which might be we're just here, and it might be we feel like we're with more of the group or the world in whatever way feels true for you. And just notice what that's like to breathe. And again, if there's something that anyone would like to say, just have a minute or three more of the space in this way.
Yeah, I want to name something. For me at the moment, it's a difficulty of not having a sort of romantic partner anymore, not having that level of that intimacy.
Right. Having had and now no longer having a romantic intimate partner, and the loss of that intimacy of relating with someone. Yeah. Yeah. So again, there's loss. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
So love can be quite difficult to bear.
Yeah, love can be difficult to bear. Yeah, yeah. So let's just... Oh, okay, you're done.
There's something when people are saying anything, there's something palpable, but I don't know the word.
Okay. So there's a recognizing or a sensing of something you can feel, but you haven't got a word for it. When people are speaking.
The nearest thing I think is it's kind of bringing into an inclusiveness.
An inclusiveness, and there's a sense of a movement, of bringing into a movement of inclusion, and therefore non-exclusion. And I would language a little bit to do with when I talked about the way we constrict and separate, that actually there's a natural expansion and a starting to dissolve the separateness that happens.
The word sharing comes
sharing, from yeah. So it becomes something shared. It becomes something shared, and one of the fundamental transformative capacities we have to bring to handling that which is hard to bear in life is that we share it. And sharing it by speaking it, you know, a trouble shared is a trouble halved, a trouble shared with 70 or 80 people, there's only a little bit left. I don't mean to be light, because it could still be quite a lot, that 70th or 80th bit. Could still be quite a lot. But there's something about the sharedness that holds it when we realize it's not just mine. And this is so important.
I'm really reacting against you saying that. I think it's something about being the center of the new world, actually, by being in touch with the amount of the, my own others, the connection. And actually, there's a bit of me wanting to just go.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. I'm really grateful that you're sensitive and aware of what's going on and could bring it. And if it feels like what's happening is a bit more than we can handle, it's okay to step back or to say that's enough. And that's just taking care of where you're at. It's not about rejecting what else is going on. And I'm aware that this is challenging. And yet, to me, it seems important. So please really be respectful to whatever you find is what you need. And trust that that's okay. And that other people will also be doing that too. Yeah.
Can I add to that? Impotence.
Impotence. Yeah. That can be really hard. Yeah. 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 So there are so many ways in which we can encounter what is difficult. And we can see that it's not easy for us to let it in. And I'm not saying we have to somehow force that opening. And it's not possible or useful to do so. But just allow ourselves, so far as we can, to be sensitive. And so far as we need to say that's enough, it's okay. Just as like I said, at a certain point we want to put on some extra warm things. When we're getting cold or too cold, there's a point where we say that's enough. Tell it in for now. But part of what's here is actually a very safe and kind space, and that we've all agreed to be here in a way that we respect each other and life, and that we want to be supportive to each other. So we don't right now have to explain our experience to anybody else. We don't have to explain it to ourselves. But perhaps we start to see that it is something shared. And sometimes what's hard about letting it in is that it actually challenges. I'm not saying this is your experience, because it could also just be hard, because it's hard. It is hard. But it also challenges the way in which we might actually be invested in or attached to being separate. And that's part of why it's not easy. Not just because it's hard, but because it's actually a paradigm changer. But that's also why and how it's transforming. So it's just after 1:15, which is a little later than I thought we'd get here, but that's just how things go. It's lunchtime, or we'll begin, we'll have some lunch. I'd like to say we'll take 1.25 hours. Does that feel like there'll be plenty of time, spacious, to rest or walk, eat, and if you need to even, there may be some who have to get something to eat. That should give time to go down to Golders Green or up to the Park Cafe. So I guess people know about if maybe.
Want me to say something?
In a moment, just a moment. Yeah, I can say. I'd really encourage you to stay with yourself, to not get into your mobile phones or books or publicity materials or other stuff. Stay with the sensitivity. Stay with the field. Notice what it's like to be with yourself and with each other in this place in which we're interested to understand both suffering and the end of suffering. Both dukkha and freedom. And what it's like just to move gently, compassionately, but also honestly in the space of our lives right here together. And so it's not a shared meal, which is a lovely thing, and I initiated those shared meals when we first started these day retreats. Must be about 16 or 17 years ago. It's not that I don't like doing them. But that I just wanted there to be a bit more time for that inner process that was kind of so I could hold it more for this day. So I hope that's okay with you, that I, without asking you, decided that we'd do it that way. And so I hope you have a enjoyable and nourishing lunchtime in terms of the food, and taking food for our nourishment is also, a sacred and kind thing to be engaged in. And please feel free to enjoy as many cups of tea as you'd like over the lunchtime.